Vice Chair, we are ready to get started when you are. And if anyone joins a little after we do roll call, I'll just note it for the record.
Got it. Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call to order the July 7th, 2021 meeting of the TPA Citizens Advisory Committee. The Palm Beach TPA is conducting this meeting both in person and virtually using the Zoom webinar platform. Instructions to join the virtual meeting as well as contact information for assistance are provided in the published meeting agenda. Staff, please call the roll so that we can establish quorum.
Committee members, please respond by saying "here" when I call your name. And then for those in the room, as a reminder, when you hit the button on the base and it turns red at the top, it means that you're on and they can hear you virtually. So Ramona Bean.
Here.
Terry Brown. Mark Bruner is absent. Michael Carter.
Present.
Greg Fagan is absent. Michael Fitzpatrick is absent. Mark Forrest.
I'm here.
James Garvin.
Here.
Vijay Mishra.
Here.
Ryan Rossi.
Here.
Paul Orion. Myra Newman is absent. Cheryl Schneider.
Here.
Richard Vasilotti.
Here.
Albert Richwagen.
Here.
And Wen Dang is absent.
Staff, are there any modifications to the agenda?
Yes, Mr. Vice Chair. Pursuant to state law, a quorum of the CAC must be physically present at the advertised meeting site in order to conduct the meeting and take action as a body. Due to a quorum not being present, the meeting will move forward as information only, with the committee able to provide staff feedback by consensus. Additionally, we will defer item 1C, approval of the June minutes, to our September 1st meeting.
This item is deferred to the September meeting due to lack of quorum. As a reminder, there are three ways to provide public comments for this meeting. Written comments may be submitted online at a web provided in the agenda. At a website provided in the agenda. Verbal comments may be made by a virtual attendee using the raise hand feature in the Zoom platform. Verbal and written comments may be provided by an in-person attendee submitting a comment card available at the welcome table. Staff, have any general comments been received?
No, Mr. Vice Chair.
At this time, I want to invite any CAC member comments on the items not already on the agenda. For members participating remotely, please utilize the raised hand feature in the Zoom platform. And then remember to unmute your microphone once you are recognized.
I do not have any hands raised at, oh, I'm sorry. Richard Vasilotti has his hand raised, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair.
Mr. Vasilotti.
Hi there, good afternoon. Happy 4th, belated. Real quick about the Zoom, because I'm not very familiar with this, with the state law, I heard Margarita say. So in order to have a quorum, we have to be present at the CAC facility, the TPA facility. Is that correct?
Pursuant to state law, which is a sunshine law, a quorum of an advisory committee, at least for our advisory committee, does need to be present at an advertised meeting site. So for the CAC, I need a quorum of members, which I don't remember the number. I think it's 7 or 8. I need present in person to allow for virtual attendees to be able to vote on items. Previously, in January of this year, the governing board did issue an emergency order that said while Palm Beach County was under a state of emergency, they would give the permission to their advisory committees to meet virtually. Because Palm Beach County is no longer in a state of emergency, we are going back to the state sunshine law that says we are required to have a quorum of members present in person.
Okay. Has that ever been challenged? I mean, the Zoom seemed to work great. You know, we're volunteers once a month. Nobody's being paid here. And as far as I'm concerned, the less time I'm driving on the street to go somewhere, the safer I think all of us are. So has that ever been brought up in question? I mean, the Zoom seems to work wonderfully.
During the earlier stages of the pandemic, it was brought up and the governor did issue allowances to do virtual meetings, but that did expire, I believe, in December or November of 2020. And that's when the board, or maybe earlier than that, I'm sorry. And that's when our governing board gave the allowance to have their advisory committees meet virtually. Unfortunately, we are required to have you meet, at least have a quorum of members present in person. It will probably be something that a lot of municipalities or governing bodies will bring up, because I know a lot of people do find it helpful and very convenient to do virtual meetings. But at this time, that is the only guidance that we have.
Okay, so maybe this is something we can bring up in the near future and see if we can change this.
And I can take that back to my staff, my executive director, and our legal counsel to give us direction. But at this time, we would need a quorum present in person. But we'll bring you an update at the September meeting.
Fantastic. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'd like to invite Andrew Yerlin, TPA Deputy Director of Program Development, to provide an update.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Andrew Euler, Deputy Director of Program Development. Your usual liaison, Jason Price, is out of town this week, so I'll be covering for him. I also wanted to say welcome to any new members who might be new this month. I think we do have a few. We have Cheryl Snyder. Thank you for being here. And we appreciate you all being able to join us on this committee. Okay, and Mark Forrest, who's also in the room present, is new to the committee as well. So again, thank you for your service to our committee. We're excited to have more people to contribute. So on the screen, and there's a printout in the room, I'm just gonna go through a liaison report, some updates for July. The first one is George Bush Boulevard Public Meeting. So this is a project that was funded by the TPA in Delray Beach, and they're doing a public meeting. FDOT's conducting this meeting virtually and in person on July 8th, 2021. The virtual meeting will begin at 5 p.m. and you can see the link on this page. This will also be available on our website on the CAC page after the meeting. So you can go to that link as well to find it. The in-person meeting will begin at 6 p.m. that same day at 434 South Swinton Ave in Delray Beach, Florida. Next, the Florida Local Technical Assistance Program, LTAP Center, hosts a series of webinars for transportation. They have plenty of webinars on their calendar for the month of July. So if you want to view those, it's at floridaltap.org/training-calendar for more information there. Our next governing board meeting for July is going to be held on July 15th, both in person and virtually at 9 a.m. And to view the packet, which will go out this Thursday, you'll see it at palmbeachtpa.org/board. And then the last big update I wanted to give you all for July is the Turnpike is hosting a public hearing for their product development environmental study for the Turnpike widening in the north part of the county. It goes from Jupiter to Fort Pierce. And this is going to be a hybrid public meeting. So they have two in-person meetings in Port St. Lucie and in Stewart on Thursday, July 22nd at 5:30 p.m. And then they also have it online. And you get more information at treasurecoastturnpike.com. And the next thing I wanted to bring up is actually in the next slide here. Our strategic plan that was passed last year had an action to create a video to broadcast about the TPA. And so that video was completed and we have it for you all to see here, just a few minutes. And we'd like to share that with you.
Palm Beach County is the gateway to the beauty and splendor of South Florida. This world-class county is over 1,900 square miles and the home to nearly 1.5 million people, representing 39 municipalities. It features an efficient transportation system for pedestrians, bicycles, buses, trains, cars, planes, and boats. It takes a dynamic and eco-friendly devoted team to plan, prioritize, and fund this system, a team with a vision to execute a safe, efficient, and connected multimodal transportation system. The Palm Beach Transportation Planning Agency, or TPA for short, is that and so much more. The governing board is made up of 21 locally elected officials. As an independent agency, the TPA has its own staff and four advisory committees. The TPA has adopted a complete streets policy, ensuring that its projects accommodate transportation users of all ages and abilities. The TPA is also a Vision Zero agency, allocating resources to eliminate traffic-related fatalities and serious injuries. We advance our vision by adopting a funding program that allocates over $600 million annually, including gas taxes at the federal, state, and local levels, toll revenues, license and impact fees, and more. The TPA invests in multimodal transportation projects that help build a better and brighter future. This includes construction of state and local roadways, investing in technology to maximize the efficiency of existing infrastructure, and advancing our transit vision. With $3.4 billion for the Transportation Improvement Program, there is so much more on the horizon for our growing county. We're connecting communities to deliver a better transportation system. But to make it happen, we want to hear from you. Get involved with the Palm Beach Transportation Planning Agency. Tell us your priorities, from pedestrian and bicycle safety to traffic congestion and everything in between. Visit palmbeachtpa.org to get involved and learn more.
All right, thank you. So our staff worked hard on that, and it really came together well. If you have any questions on that or anything else in the liaison report, I'd be happy to answer them.
Staff, are there any public comments on this item?
No, Mr. Vice Chair.
Do any committee members have any comments or questions on the liaison report?
I do not see any hands raised.
Then I'd like to invite Andrew to present this item.
And Mr. Vice Chair, before Andrew gets started, as a reminder, even though it is an action item, it's a motion to recommend adoption. It'll only be informational. So any suggestions that the committee has would just be taken back as staff.
Understand.
Okay, thank you again. So this is a very important item that we have annually. This is our list of priority projects for fiscal year 2023 to 2027. So I can get this started here. This is actually something that is required by state law for the TPA to adopt. And what this is our list of priorities with the federal and state funds that we directly prioritize. We provide a list of priorities to FDOT to put into their work program. And then ultimately this gets into our transportation improvement program. So what we're looking at here is fiscal years 2023 to 2027, which is another year away from now. So it's going to start next July 1st. And I wanted to mention that this is actually going to be a joint presentation by multiple people on our staff, the ones who oversee the programs that are in this plan, this list of priority projects. They're all going to come up and present their sections of this document. So our mission to collaboratively plan, prioritize, and fund the transportation system, emphasizing here the prioritization process. And the development process going from product development all the way to the transportation improvement program actually takes a long time. It's a little over a year of work to get through the entire process. This past month, we actually adopted our transportation improvement program for fiscal year 22 to 2026. And what we're doing today, and the list of priority products is actually for next year's 23 to 27. So this all starts with the product development. So over the past 6 months, we've been working with FDOT and local municipalities to gather different projects, some of them through our local initiatives program and our transportation alternatives program to prioritize and score those projects to be presented into the list of priority projects. And then for state road modifications, our ones worked with FDOT in the cities to fund on state roadways. So once we prioritize these in a list of priority products, which is before you today for consideration, those then are given to FDOT, and they use those when they are updating their draft work program, which is the 5 years of products within our county, federal and state. Once they build that, they send that to us next year, and then we create the transportation improvement programs. That's including those products in the WARP program, those federal and state projects, and then also any local projects that we find in the local capital program. So to create a more comprehensive transportation program for all types of projects in our county. The three programs that we have for you all today, the ones that we prioritize directly with funds, are state road modifications on state roads using state revenues. It's around $20.4 million a year. Then there's our two federal surface transportation funds programs, local initiatives and transportation alternatives. The local initiatives projects, around $22 million a year with federal funds, and then transportation alternatives around $3 million a year in federal funds. So the first program is state road modifications. And I'm going to hand it over to our coordinator of those, Connor.
Terrific. Thank you, Andrew. And thank you all for having me here today. My name is Connor Capobasso, and I'm the Long Range Transportation Plan Coordinator here at the TPA. And with that, I also manage the state road modifications program for the TPA as well. So many of you may not be as familiar with the state road modifications program, and that's okay. It's a relatively new program here at the TPA. And as you'll see in the strategic business plan later on today, we are actually still working on it and still trying to formalize the program similar to our LI and TA programs. But essentially the purpose of this program is to enhance existing roadways and upcoming state projects to achieve the TPA's mission and vision. And the way we do that is through things like safety improvements, complete streets projects, transit improvement technology, and resiliency projects. And these are mainly focused on the state roadways. Now, this program dedicates about $20 million in state funds each year. However, if you were to look in the TIP, you'll notice that there's actually quite a bit more funding available for this program. And that's because we like to leverage the different funding mechanisms that we have available to us to get the most amount of money possible for these types of projects. Now, there is two types of projects in this program that we'll be focusing on. There's essentially new projects, so projects that are just being thought of or are coming from a study or something like that, that aren't programmed or do not have any funds assigned to it. And those types of projects will typically be programmed in the new fifth year of the TIP. The second type of project is what we're calling modifications. And these are typically included in the current year of that project that is being modified. So say a construction project is in 2023, the modification, the funds will typically be added to that project in 2023. That way the project stays on course just with those changes that we are adding to it. And of course that all depends on the funding availability. Oops. There we go. So I wanted to provide some highlights. This isn't all the projects that are in the state road modifications list. It's just a couple highlights of some of the major requests that we are asking. And I was going to kick it off with our US 1 corridor study, the projects that came out of that corridor study. So the first one I wanted to highlight is we are seeking construction funding for a lane repurposing project in the city of Boca Raton. We are seeking design and construction funding for a complete streets project in West Palm Beach, as well as some feasibility funding for a lane repurposing project in Lake Worth Beach. In addition to that, we are removing one project, and that is on US 1 in the village of North Palm Beach, and that was at the request of the city. So moving on from the US 1 corridor, there are a couple more projects that I'd like to highlight. The first of which is we're seeking a PD&E study funding for fiscal year 2023 for a extension of the Tri-Rail into Jupiter. We're also looking to get some funding for transit signal prioritization for the Lake Worth Enhanced Transit Project. And we are also seeking add some funding or accelerate some funding for the Atlantic Avenue widening project. That would be funding for right-of-way and construction for the segment of Lyons Road to Jog Road. In addition to this, our board also wanted to seek a modification to that scope for the entire widening project to add separated bike lanes throughout the entire project. And lastly, I wanted to mention that we are also looking to add or program 4 new projects, as well as 3 modifications in the new list of priority projects. And I wanted to bring those up for you here. So those are the modifications that we're looking to add, or the new projects and modifications that we're looking to add to the priority list. And I'll go through them for you here. So the first one is the Forest Hill Boulevard project, and we are seeking to do some complete streets improvements along that corridor. Things like adding roadway lighting and pedestrian lighting, as well as a bus layover facility, enhanced crosswalks at signalized intersections, as well as some green marking in bicycle conflict zones. The next one is the Congress Ave project. We are again seeking some pedestrian lighting, enhanced crosswalks at signalized intersections, as well as some bus stop amenities. Now, the next one is actually a request by the city of Boca Raton. They are seeking to do some signalization upgrades, upgrading some span wires to mast arms, as well as some additional enhancements throughout the different corridors. The next one is the State Road 7 corridor. We're seeking to modify an existing resurfacing project to add a shared use pathway on the west side, as well as a sidewalk on the east side. We're looking to add some pedestrian lighting and again, some green markings in conflict zones for bike lanes. The Boynton Beach project, we are seeking to actually modify 2 projects, one a resurfacing project as well as a interchange capacity project to provide wider sidewalks and separated bike lanes on both sides of the roadway. And the last one here is the Indian Town Road, which was a request by DOT. This was for a PD&E study to evaluate congestion mitigation alternatives with minimal adverse impacts to pedestrians, cyclists, as well as business owners along that roadway corridor. And with that, that's the end of the state road modification section. So I'll actually pass it back over to Andrew.
Thank you. And so actually for the local initiatives, this is the program that is overseen by Jason Price, who's also your typical liaison. So he oversees the transportation improvement program and then this local initiatives program where he works with the local jurisdictions for these applications and the prioritization process. So the purpose of this program is to advance lower cost, non-regionally significant transportation products identified by our community. So they submit applications and then we score those and rank those based on the goals, objectives of the TPA. These are all federal funds that come to us for this program. And so they can be used on all federal aid eligible roadways. Those are all the urban minor collectors or above roadways. So not like your typically smaller local roadways. It's around $22 million a year in federal funds. And then we provide a maximum reimbursement of $5 million per project at a minimum of $250,000. And then what's the timeline for these projects is really when they're prioritized, we try to fund design in the third year of the program and then construction in the fifth year of the program. So when you think about the transportation improvement program, our work program, it's a 5-year funding document. So design usually starts in year 3 and the construction's in year 5. So any new projects most likely will see construction in year 5. So in this case, it would be 2027. Some project highlights. I'm just going to go through the highlights just like Connor did. There's a larger list of all the projects in your packet for the entire list. The first ones I wanted to highlight are the funding of 5 prioritized projects from last year that were not able to be funded in that cycle. So we have 5 that were in the 2020 grant cycle, totaling around $12 million in requests. And so what we're doing this time around is recommending that those 5 be funded before the new cycle. And those start as 20-1 in the table and go to 20-6. The new products, which start as 21-1, are one submitted this grant cycle. And so we're looking to prioritize all 4 of the new applications that were received. There's actually five products in the packet that were on the list. We combined two products from the county that were on Prosperity Farms Road in North County. They actually had two products that were limits that were back to back. And when the cost assessments came back, they're lower for both sections together. When the cost assessments came back a lot lower upfront, so we can still be under that $5 million cap. So we're recommending as staff to combine those together. And we think doing that, we can still fund all the priorities moving forward. So the total amount requested for those four projects is $14.5 million. And again, those are going to be projects 21-1 all the way to 21-4. The next one, that's all the highlights I have for you for those, and I'll go through those individually. And I just want to make one more point is that when we prioritize these, we're really looking at anticipated funding available. So if we're running out of funding, it may hinder how much we can actually program. So some of the lower ranked projects are still like sort of on that bubble of whether or not they'll be funding available. So here are the 2021 applications. And so they're in order of the scoring that we gave for TPA. And it goes to the TPA score, who the applicant was, the location, the description, and the requested funds, and then the status. And I'll go through them individually. So the first one's from Tri-Rail, and that's for a new passenger rail car. And it's $2.5 million. The next is the Palm Beach County product I mentioned where we combined them. And that's Prosperity Farms Road from North Lake to Donald Ross Road. And that's to provide designated bike lanes throughout that corridor. And when you combine those products together, it's around $4.9 million. And I wanted to point out the status here, and you'll see the status for the remainder of the projects. It says less than 25 points. We originally put in, and it's in our guidelines right now for local initiatives, that anything under 25 points would not be eligible for funding. And that was sort of like a flag that we put in there to make sure that we're prioritizing good projects. In reality, though, what we're seeing when we score these projects is the LI scoring system, even though it's out of 100 points, it's really well-rounded towards a lot of different goals. So most of the projects are scoring around the teens and the 20s overall. So we're still recommending we have this in here because we still consider it as a viable project, a good project. The next one is the Indian Trail Improvement District. And this is for three roadways out there, Temple Boulevard, Hall Boulevard, and 140th Ave North. And that's to provide unpaved pathways and to widen sidewalks for $2.5 million. Again, there's that status of less than 25 points. But another one I wanted to mention to you all is when we get projects in for along roadways that abut single family residential properties, if you can imagine a lot of single family residences do maintain driveways that are in the right of way. So they're in the public domain. And they also may have hedges or other types of furnishings within the right of way. And they're the ones directly impacted by the project. So we typically require a higher level of public outreach. And for this product, we did require that higher level of public outreach. And this is one of those other ones that we sort of flag to make sure that, you know, if you are getting some opposition, you sort of understand those needs there and you still feel confident about moving the product forward. And this is the case in this one. So we wanted to flag it because when they did public outreach out there, they didn't meet the threshold of 25% of those who did not oppose. They really only got 9 total residents who abut the corridors to provide their input. And there's 3 households that are opposed to it. The other 6 were in support of it. And then they had a lot of other surrounding neighbors and others in the community who supported the project for the majority of those. And then they had their governing board support it. And then they had 2 other community organizations support it. So they're confident in the product moving forward. And so we're also confident in this still being a viable project with minimal impacts to those residences. So that's why it's still on the list here. But I wanted to show you that and flagged up for you all and sort of how we sort of go through that process to make sure that a product won't hit any snags or other oppositions to the product moving forward. And lastly is West Palm Beach has Mercer Avenue from Australian Ave to Center Park Boulevard. And this is a sort of incomplete street, so we call it. So includes bike lanes, some sidewalk improvements where appropriate, and some other enhancements for pedestrians. It's $4.5 million. And again, this is under that less 25 points. But what we're looking to do is try to fund all of these projects with available revenues moving forward. So they're all on the list. And that's all I have for you. So our last one's going to be our transportation alternatives program with Alyssa.
Oh, yeah. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Alyssa Frank. I'm the pedestrian bicycle coordinator here at the Palm Beach TPA. So I actually also oversee the Transportation Alternatives Program. This is a program that has about $3.3 million each year available for non-motorized infrastructure and safe routes to school projects. Projects can include complete streets, bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure, traffic calming, recreational trails, historic preservation, and of course, safe routes to school. Eligible projects are on and off the federal aid eligible roadway network. I'm sorry, I'm getting all my words tied together. And like I said, it's about $3.3 million a year, and the funding is reimbursed it's a three-year timeline versus the five-year from the previous project. So design is reimbursed in year one, construction is reimbursed in year three, and the project limitations, the maximum amount for a project is $1 million and the minimum is $250,000. So to highlight all of the priority projects, all existing projects from last year and previously are moving forward. And we had received four new applications this year. All four projects are eligible, and the total amount requested is about $3.55 million. So I'm going to run through the projects in the order that the BT PAC ranked them. The first project that we'll talk about was applied for through the city of Palm Beach Gardens. And this is for a 9.5-foot separated two-way bicycle track on Burns Road from Military Trail to alternate A1A. This project was, the requested funding for this was $1 million and it is eligible. The second project on this list was applied for through the city of Boca Raton. And this is for lighting on the El Rio Trail. And so the lighting will be installed from Glades Road to Yamato Road. This funding request was also for $1 million and it is eligible, although what Andrew just discussed about the project being less than 25 points is the case here. However, the BT PAC did rank this project higher because of increased capacity to use the trail in early morning and late evening hours when it's dark out. The scoring also did not reflect the college students' lower income. The third project on here is a project in the Indian Trail Improvement District. This is for two roadways. Both roadways will have the same typical section. So on one side of the road, it's going to be a 10-foot shared use path. And on the other side of the road, it's an 8-foot pathway. The two roadways for this project are Grapeview Boulevard from Key Lime Boulevard to 60th Street, and then Key Lime Boulevard from Hall Boulevard to the M1 Canal. This project also, or this application also requested about $1 million in funding and is also eligible. And lastly, the fourth project on this list is in Wellington, and this is for a 10-foot shared use path along the C8 canal from Stribling Way to Forest Hill Boulevard. This project requested just over $500,000 and is also eligible. So, if I guess we're not doing this as an action item, but it's we are requesting a motion to recommend adoption for the fiscal year 23 to 24 list of priority projects.
Yeah. And this is Andrew Liaison. You know, as Alyssa mentioned, we're not seeking an action here since we don't have quorum, but whatever feedback you all can provide or ways of improving this document as well, we'd love to hear your feedback on this to make it more understandable. We know there's a lot of products in here and it's a lot to go through. So we appreciate you all being able to provide that feedback and comments. But I just wanted to mention, you know, even past this meeting, if you all go through the document in your own time and you see things that could be better, ways to display the information or a presentation, we'd love to make it an easier thing for you all to consume. But other than that, you know, whatever you all want to do when it comes to any actions you want to take here is really, it would be by consent. So it wouldn't be a formal motion for adoption, but it would be items towards us, and then it would be as a consent action.
Consensus.
Staff, are there any public comments on this item?
No, Mr. Vice Chair. I do have a committee member with their hand raised. I have Vijay.
Chair, this is Vijay here. I got a question for Andrew. Being comparatively new to the board, the question I had is on the 2021 local initiative applications, when they are scoring the TBA scores. If you can give a quick background into how do you guys actually score it? Doesn't need to be very detailed, but a very brief summary as to how do you score these things? What are the criterias?
Yes, thank you. I can give an update on that. So both the local initiatives and the transportation alternatives have a scoring rubric out of 100. And actually, you all will later on in coming months see that rubric for review, and then we'll open up the next application process. But for the scoring rubric, it's really trying to be tied to the goals, objectives identified in our long range transportation plan. So a lot of the metrics are geared towards just the facilities you put out there. For example, like you'll get points for the type of bike lanes or separated bike lanes or adding sidewalks or shared use paths. Then there's points towards safety. So if you're on a high crash corridor and our Vision Zero action plan and you have products that go towards improving safety for that corridor, you'll get points. There's also ones for traditionally underserved. So lower income communities and other people who are disadvantaged, there's points towards providing products in those communities. And so it's a pretty well-rounded scoring system, but it's still based on our long-range transportation plan goals and objectives. And then the transportation alternatives program is very similar, but it is geared even more so to non-motorized transportation. So you'll get more points dedicated to pedestrian and bicycle facilities.
The follow-up I have is that you mentioned that the way the scoring is done, it kind of skews toward the lower end, which is like in teens and 20s. So the scoring criteria that we have right now, is there a way we can improve? Because it looks like there is a score of 10 here, 10 out of 100. I'm like, doesn't sound like it's really there. So wouldn't it be much more beneficial if we have scoring that is more reflective of the value of the project rather than just some rubric, which doesn't even necessarily applies here, because to someone who's looking at it, you're talking about a 1/10 of the scoring. So that's just the only thing I think that if there's a way we can make the project either don't show the TPS score or just show it like the value of beyond the score itself. That's just a comment I had. Thank you.
And Vice Chair, I don't see any other hands raised at this time. Oh, I'm sorry.
Let's move on to the next item.
Richard actually raised his hand. I'm sorry.
Yes, go right ahead.
Hello, Andrew. Question for you. The projects that were mentioned in Indian Trail Improvement District, which is obviously in the acreage, those 10-foot shared pathways or unpaved pathways, are those for horses? Is that an equestrian path? What's the purpose of the pathway?
Hi, it's Alyssa Frank. I can actually answer that. So they are actually, in shared use terminology, both. They are being proposed in the plans with a material that works for both pedestrians, cyclists, and equestrians. But the design of these facilities for the 10-foot wide facility is being designed to accommodate both types of users. The 8-foot path facility is not. It's just pedestrians.
Okay. Who requested that this project would begin? Who brought up the idea? Was that from the Indian Trail Board or was that from somewhere else?
Nope. These projects were applied to us on behalf or by the Indian Trail Improvement District Board.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other board comments?
I have Cheryl with her hand raised.
Yes, thank you. I had a question about the Indian Town Road and Central Boulevard project. I wanted to get a little more information about what sort of congestion mitigation plans you were looking at for that area. And also was interested to know whether Island Way South was something that you're considering as part of that plan, since that would extension of that road would in fact take a lot of the traffic off of Indian Central Boulevard at Indian Town Road.
Hello, Connor again. So that project, again, it was proposed by DOT. So they're doing a PD&E study for that area. So they're looking at a couple different things. The one alternative that they were looking at was displaced lefts, but we're asking them to look at some additional alternatives as well, since that does take up quite a bit of space. I believe the county also has a project in that area. I'm not entirely sure what the details are on that, but DOT is going to be looking at, you know, traffic studies, counts, things like that to determine what the best solution is for that area. And we'll be working with them as well as the county and the city to determine and to decide upon a project in that area. So, and when it does get programmed, it'll come to the board and the committees as an item in the TIP as well. So you'll see it in there throughout the process. So.
And about roughly how long do these studies take? Since I'm new, I really don't know.
The PD&E, I believe it can take, I think, over a year, right? Yeah, so a little over a year, sometimes 2 years. And then after that, they'll program the design in the new fifth year, or sometimes they'll program the design a little bit earlier. But, you know, this project, it's probably not going to come through for at least, you know, probably 8 years plus, depending on, you know, when they complete the study, when the design's done, and then when the construction funding is available. So.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, sure thing.
Okay. I think that concludes all the member comments on this item, Mr. Vice Chair.
I'd like to invite Valerie Nilsson, TPA Director of Multimodal Development, to present this next item.
Good afternoon, everyone. I will be presenting our draft fiscal year 22 strategic plan. We just finished our fiscal year 21, which runs from July 1st through June 30th. So we're just starting on the new fiscal year. Before presenting the draft strategic plan, I'm going to give a few highlights of this past year. And if you didn't grab a copy, I think you might have it in front of you. We have an annual report that gives some of the highlights from this past year that I'm going to touch on now, which include a timeline of some of the things that happened during fiscal year 21, including the adoption of our fiscal year 2022 to 2026 Transportation Improvement Program, which is our five-year work program, supporting the regional transportation plan adoption of the 2045 RTP, renewed commitment to Vision Zero, a ribbon cutting for Palm Trans new headquarters, which was a TPA, partially TPA funded project, and a series of virtual meetings and events that we held over this past year. In addition, we also received two agency designations, including best workplaces for commuters and bicycle friendly business silver designation. The annual report and the strategic plan are structured around our six goals. And so some of these highlights here for under engage the public, we reached over 2,000 people, participants in our events. We highlight some of our planning activities that we do under plan the system, including walking, bicycle safety audits and studies, an overview of our transportation improvement program for prioritizing funding, some of the projects that we implemented and construction highlights, and then ways that we collaborated with our partners, as well as workshops and events, as well as our report card from this past fiscal 21 strategic plan. So the strategic plan is not a mandatory thing. It's more of a best practice that we do. It's a one-year plan of specific, 3 to 5 specific actions and outcomes we want to try to achieve over the next year. This is in addition to our mandatory 2-year unified planning work program that has general planning items and across our six goals of what we will be working on. So we met, we met with our board committee, so a subcommittee from our board, and staff presented our draft modifications to the strategic plan, and they provided us feedback. And based on that, that's what I'll be presenting to you today for your thoughts. And then also we'll be bringing the final version to our board for adoption next week at our July 15th board meeting. So under our first goal, the way I'm going to highlight, I'm going to focus on things that are changing from the past year of things that we want to achieve and the outcomes. Boxes in red are things that are changing, are being proposed to change. Things that are striked through are deletions, and underlines are new text or new items. So for one, engage the public. B, we said instead of expand social media outreach, we want to expand our social media following. We want to grow to, currently we're about 3,000 followers. We want to reach 4,000 followers in this next year. And instead of measuring our outcome as 10 posts, social media posts per month, we want to reach 25,000 impressions per month. So the amount of people that we reach. For 1D, earlier today, we saw the video of explaining the role of the TPA. So that was a one-time thing. We are striking through that because we completed that. And we're saying that our new action there is to increase public awareness of the TPA. And the outcome would be 40 TPA related media stories. And then for 1E, provide live online access to board meetings. That was also a one-time thing. We did that in January. So now our new action that we're proposing there is to present TPA initiatives to partner agencies and groups with at least 15 presentations to local communities and partner agencies so that we can raise awareness about what we do and get more input in the transportation planning process. For goal two, plan the system, we added a new action here to refine a countywide mobility vision and funding plan. So in our long-range transportation plan for 2045 that we adopted a couple of years ago, we identified different desires that we want for example, multimodal corridors and transit corridors. So now we want to refine that, working with our communities, with our partner agencies, and develop the funding plan over this next year. So refined vision plan. For conducting pedestrian bicycle safety field reviews, walking bike audits, that's been really successful. Alyssa here has been our champion leading that effort, and we want to up that to 5 locations in this new year from 3 as our goal. For 2D, publish long-range transportation implementation report. That's something that we're doing as an ongoing basis, so we don't really find that as we're just continuing to do that. So instead of we didn't really consider that a strategic item anymore. So instead we're saying implement and update our Vision Zero Action Plan, which is a plan that we adopted a couple of years ago. So we want to update that and make sure we're implementing the actions we identified there. We striked through Create Smart Palm Beach website. That's something that we completed and it's live now. We had said we wanted to create a Complete Streets Opportunities Plan, identifying opportunities. We started down that path and then we realized that our complete street design guidelines that we had created in 2017 are a bit outdated. A lot has changed since then. So we want to update our design guidelines to be consistent with current standards and definitions. And as through that process, identify complete streets opportunities. So we modified that action and goal there. For goal 3, prioritize funding, we strike through notify partners of funding opportunities because that's also just an ongoing thing that we're doing and we're notifying in our committees through our liaison reports on social media and our newsletters. So we don't find that as strategic anymore to really point out, it's just an ongoing thing. For 3A, update TA and LI scoring system. That's something that we're also doing on an ongoing basis every year. So we're striking through that as a strategic item. Instead, we're saying, let's create a state road modification scoring system. So currently we have 3 pots we have of funding every year that we prioritize projects for. We have state roads, we have our local initiatives grant program, and then we have our transportation alternatives grant program. Transportation alternatives are usually pedestrian bicycle projects that can be on or off the federally aid eligible roadway system. The local initiatives program, and that's about $3 million. The local initiatives program is about $22 million. And that can be only on the federally aid eligible system, but it could be on a local, county, or DOT road. And then state road projects, we have been prioritizing already, but we want to create a scoring system to prioritize those better on the state road system. So we want to develop a scoring system to prioritize those over the next year. For 3C, that's just in line with this. So identify safety projects, that's something that we're doing on an ongoing basis. So we said, let's create an application project process for these safety projects on the state road system. So in line with the scoring system, let's create an application process so that our local municipalities can propose ideas and apply to us for projects on state roads. And we can work with them and FDOT to prioritize those and hopefully make them happen. For 3D, we modified the language there. This past year, we adopted legislative and policy positions. So we are saying, let's advocate instead of law changes, let's advocate for those policy and legislative positions that we adopted. And so for an example of that, over this past year, one of the things in our Vision Zero Action Plan was to require that the driver's test, when people go to get their driver's license, that they get questions about bicycle safety, about how are you supposed to behave as a motor vehicle? What are the laws of the interactions between bicycles and pedestrians and cars? And those are the new exam that we'll hear a little bit more from Melissa in a later presentation today. Actually, the new driver's exam does include 25 questions for bicycle safety. So that's an example of things that we're trying to advocate for to raise awareness and promote safety. For goal four, we had an outcome of engaging stakeholders and reviewing 20 projects that are upcoming to make sure they're promoting the TPA's vision of a safe, efficient, and connected multimodal transportation system, and also engaging with the local community. We're upping that number to 50 projects to try to evaluate and really keep an eye on and engage with the local communities on these upcoming projects. We're striking through the TPA priority project status report because that's an ongoing thing that we do regardless. And for 4D, we are modifying the text a little. MCORS is no longer happening. So we actually striked through that. And we said, let's monitor the collection of the SCETS tax revenue and manage lane revenue, but also let's also manage construction funds allocated for plant material. So landscaping per DOT, what's happening with that? So that's something we want to keep an eye on. For 5, collaborate with partners. We strike through collect ped bike activity counts. That's something that we're just going to be doing on an ongoing basis. We're working with the county and evaluating different technologies for that to try to measure pedestrian and bicycle activities throughout the county. We added to assist local governments with transportation studies and plans. We added mobility, so not just transportation, but mobility studies and plans. We want to help our local municipalities with those efforts. And then for 5B, we said, instead of workshops, we made it a little more broad, conduct events on topics of interest. And we upped it from 3 to 4. So those could be events, workshops, different ways to collaborate with partners. And then for 5C, we had said, let's create a video about complete streets projects here in Florida locally to raise awareness. We're almost done with that. We'll be bringing that next time we meet in September. So our new video that we want to create is to create a video about mobility options here in Palm Beach County. So someone might go to a Palm Trans website or Tri-Rail's website or the city's website for their trolleys, but we want to create a video that people that live in Palm Beach County or visit Palm Beach County can have an overview of how do I get around Palm Beach County? What are my options? How can I figure this out? So kind of an educational video to highlight those options. And finally, goal 6, administer the agency. We combined our previous A and B. A was to provide our board members training at conferences and local workshops. And B was to provide TPA staff training. We combined that to say provide board member and staff training. And then we upped the number to 40. And then so we have 21 board members and 15 staff. And then one new B that we have is to modify the TPA committees to support TPA initiatives and revise operating procedures. So we want to look at what is our committee makeups? Are we missing any members? Do we need to revisit to make sure that we're aligning and trying to move forward with the right representation for our goals and objectives? And I think that's pretty much it. On that last one, it's more the comprehensive annual financial report. That's something that we want to continue to produce and provide summaries. So that's an overview of what we're proposing for our draft fiscal year 22 strategic plan of key things that we want to get done above and beyond the general unified planning work program. If there's any questions or comments.
No. Thank you, Valerie. Do we have any public comments at this time?
No, Mr. Vice Chair.
Staff, are there any committee members have any comments at this time?
I don't have any in-person members with their hands raised, and I don't see any virtual members with their hand raised either.
For this next informational item, the bike pedestrian safety update, I'd like to invite Alyssa Frank, TPA pedestrian and bicycle coordinator, to present this item.
Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. My name is Alyssa Frank. I'm the ped bike coordinator. I know I already introduced myself, just waiting on the, there we go, slides. So I am here today to discuss and let everyone know about a new bill that passed, Senate Bill 950, and this is for bicyclist safety. So just an overview before we dive into this. This bill actually adds definitions for both bicycle facilities and separated bike lanes. It also revises the requirements for a few different movements on the roadway that I'll dive deeper into each of those. So the first is driver of a motor vehicle overtaking a bicycle, turning bicyclists, riding two abreast, and then cyclist groups at stop signs. It also requires FDOT to have an annual awareness and safety campaign and requires driver's license exams to include 25 bicycle safety questions. This all went into effect on July 1st of 2021. So first, we're going to talk about the new definitions that were added in Section 316.003 of Florida statutes. The first is for a bicycle lane, and this is now defined as any portion of a roadway, which is designated by pavement markings and signs for preferential or exclusive use by bicyclists. And you see on the left side of the screen, the two white lines with the bicycle marking in the middle, that is what a designated bicycle lane looks like. On the right side of the screen, you see separated bicycle lanes, and these are defined as a bicycle lane that is separated from a motor vehicle traffic or from motor vehicle traffic by a physical barrier. So we are familiar with buffered bike lanes, and that's the two marked lines in between the bike lane and the through lane traffic. This has an actual physical barrier. So in the graphic that you see on the right side of the slide, it actually has a 6-inch curb with landscaping, and that's what we're talking about for separated facilities. So now we're going to dive into the different movements I had mentioned. The first is for vehicles overtaking bicycles or e-bikes. So this actually changed Florida Statute 316.0875, which was for no passing zones, to allow motorists to safely and briefly drive to the left of the center line of the roadway to pass cyclists with a minimum of 3 feet of passing distance. So looking at the left side of the screen, if you are that bicyclist that orange vehicle that is going straight behind the two bicyclists, you actually are now required to ride slowly behind the bicyclists until the vehicle that is oncoming traffic is out of the area. So until you can safely go around the cyclists. So you see on the right side of the screen, that oncoming traffic is gone now, so the vehicle is now able to cross that double yellow line until there is a safe amount of space between that vehicle and the bicyclists, which is 3 feet or more, and then they're able to get back into that lane and continue driving. So again, this really does change. In the previously, drivers were not able to pass that center line, but now you are, only for, again, a safe and brief way to pass cyclists. So the second movement we're going to talk about actually prevents right hook crashes. So on the screen, you see three different colored cars. The red car is making a right turn. That red car cannot make a turn if there is a bicyclist less than 20 feet away from that intersection. That red car can make that turn if you look on the right side of the screen, if a cyclist is 20 feet or more away from the intersection. And this is because when that red car is making that turn, if that cyclist is less than 20 feet and they're traveling at a normal distance, they are going to actually ride through that car and hit that car as that car is turning. So this distance does help prevent that crash. Another thing that we're going to talk about are cyclists turning left. So again, we're going to look at that left side of the screen first. And there is in that left turn lane a bicyclist, but there is also a yellow box. So bicyclists that are making left turns are legally able to take the whole left turn lane. They are treated as a vehicle and may ride as a vehicle. Now, after they have made that movement through the intersection, bicyclists should stay as close to the right edge of the roadway and the curb as possible. So after you make that turn, you're not turning into that left outer inner lane, you're turning into that outer lane and staying close to the curb. Next is single file, riding single file when there is no bike lane. So if there is no bicycle lane on a corridor, the cyclist is actually required to ride on the most right-hand, as close to that right-hand curb or edge of the roadway as possible, as you see on the screen. So cyclists are allowed to ride on the road with no bike lane, but they need to stay close to that right curb. Now, if there is a bicycle lane, cyclists are actually required to stay in that bike lane. So no bike lane, road, yes, bike lane, or you're riding in there. If the bicycle lane is too narrow to accommodate two cyclists riding two abreast, you must ride single file. On the upper left corner of this slide, you actually see three cyclists in a bike lane. They're outside of the bike lane, but they're all trying to fit. That is not okay. The cyclists, even when we're riding two abreast, must be within the bicycle lane. So if it's narrow, you have to ride single file. Now, if it's a wider bike lane, you are able to ride two abreast. Again, you have to stay within the lines of that designated bicycle space, but you are able to ride two abreast. So where can you ride more than two abreast or in a larger group? Well, the only legal place to do that is on a designated bicycle path. So actually on the screen, you see the El Rio Trail in Boca Raton. And this is a facility that does not run along the roadway. And because of that, because it's not a bicycle lane per se, but it is a other bicycle facility, it is all right to ride more than two abreast. So if you're a bicycle and you're trying to overtake another bicycle that's in the bike lane that's going slower, that's okay. You can now do that. If there is a bicyclist that is ahead of you and they're going slower than you are legally able to, when there are no vehicles and it's a safe opportunity, get into the travel lane to pass that slow bicyclist. And when you have enough room, you are able to, again, with safe distance, so 3 feet, get back into that bicycle lane and continue riding. And of course, after you've made that transition around that slower bicyclist, if you're in a group of, you know, more than two people or more than just yourself, you do need to go back to riding single file, unless it is an instance where there is a wide enough bike lane to accommodate two people riding abreast or two abreast. And the last movement we'll talk about today are for cycling groups at stop signs. So let's say there's a group of more than 10 people at a stop sign. They are actually, they have a new way to get through that movement. Now, before I dive into that, I do want to just remind everyone that bicyclists are expected to follow all roadway rules like vehicle. So they must stop at stop signs, follow traffic signals, all of the above. Now, at an instance with a stop sign like this, and there's a group of 10 people or more, the cyclists must come to a complete stop before doing any movement. However, they are allowed to travel through that stop sign as groups of 10 or less. Now, after 10 bicyclists have crossed through that stop sign, a motor vehicle is permitted to go, but then another one's not allowed to go until the rest of the group, if it's less than 10, or another group of 10 pass through. So it's an interchangeable movement like that. 10 cyclists, one car, 10 cyclists, one car. So again, This bill actually does also require FDOT to launch a safety campaign similar to ones that we have seen before, read out for rail safety, don't text and drive, alert today, alive tomorrow. This is something that we will be posting on our social media and sharing with everyone as soon as we are aware of the one that they are going to be launching. Additionally, this bill does also require 25 bicycle safety questions on the driver's license test, which is great news because this was one of our strategic plan items from last year and also one of our legislative policies that we've been trying to push for. So we're very happy to see this on there. If anyone has any additional or wants any additional information or has any questions, please do not hesitate to reach out to me. But also in the agenda, there is a link to the direct website for this bill language, and I can also share that with you. But that is it, if there are any questions.
Are there any public comments on this item?
No, Mr. Vice Chair.
Are there any board comments on this item?
I have VJ with his hand raised.
Yes, Chair. The question I had is the fact that the new law is going to require the new driver's license when they go through the training, whereby they have to be aware of the 25 questions. I'm assuming all the new changes that are being made to the bicyclist. What about the people who don't go through that? How do they get trained? Is there a mechanism that TPA has that makes sure that the folks who already have their driver's license are not familiar with these new laws, they get educated in one way or another?
So that's actually part of the purpose for FDOT having to be required to have a campaign for this. And we will also be stepping up our social media to make sure that everyone who does see it is aware of everything, but that is why FDOT is having their campaign to let everyone know and educate them of these new rules.
Thank you.
Mr. Vice Chair, I do have Ryan with his hand raised.
Hi, Ryan.
Thank you for the presentation. You kind of answered some of what my question was, but what will some of the rest of the campaign look like for the public? I mean, what are they planning to do other than social media posts?
So they haven't yet announced that, but I can definitely get back to you on that as soon as I find out. That's something that I will be following, and we will be just letting everyone know about as soon as we find out.
Any more board comments?
I do not see any other hands raised.
Thank you very much, Alyssa. Good job. So my next instructions are blurred into some other paragraphs, but I believe it says, can't read it.
I can go over it for you, Albert. So the administrative items are informational only. My staff does not have any presentations unless specifically asked by a committee member.
Staff, are there any public comments on these items?
No, Mr. Vice Chair.
Our next PAC meeting is scheduled for September 1st, 2021. As a reminder, there are no committee meetings in August. At this time, our committee meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.